Good morning. Today's House Education Committee call to order. Today is Wednesday, April 4, 2012. Time is 8:06. Present are Representative Feige, Representative Seaton, Representative Peggy Wilson, Representative Kawasaki, and myself, Representative Alan Dick, and we do have a quorum. We have three items on the agenda today. First order of business is confirmation hearing UA Board of Regents, Dale Anderson nominee, presentation by Lower Kuskokwim School District and HB 369. Student participation in sports. But first, we have across the state, we have the HSGQE test is being given, and people have asked permission to testify on HB 369. And for the record, Representative Pruitt is with us now. And we realizing that they have a time constraint and that education is what this committee is about, we want to make room for the people to want to testify on 369 to do so. So we will start with that testimony, and then we'll set the bill aside, and then we'll go on with our agenda. But we do want to provide opportunity for these people online and anybody in the room with that wants to testify on 369 and has time constraint. So that's the intent here. So. I understand we have three people offline, and in regards to, again, HB 369, Gary Matthews, are you there, sir?
Yes, I am, Representative Dick.
Okay, would you please identify yourself for the record and give your testimony, please?
Yes, I'm Gary Matthews. I am Executive Director of Alaska School Activities Association, ASAA. Our office is located in Anchorage. Representative Dick, members of the House Education Committee, good morning. I'd like to present the position of ASAA, which is the governing body of interscholastic high school activities in the state of Alaska, with 200 school high schools, which are members of Alaska School Activities Association, and which follow a standard set of rules, bylaws, and policies for interscholastic competition, including fine arts, athletics, and academic activities. Representative Sadler has introduced House Bill 369, which combines the concussion bill and the homeschool bill. The House Education Committee has scheduled a hearing for 8 a.m. on Wednesday. Please and I'd like at this time to make these following comments. Implementation of House Bill 369 will create a major change to student eligibility rules, which have been in effect for 56 years in Alaska. At this time, it's not wise to adopt such a change when school districts across the state don't know the ramifications of this bill. Our main concern is how the bill can be fairly implemented across the districts in the state, all 53 school districts which are members of Alaska School Activities Association, and how parity can be ensured when homeschool parents are providing the curriculum and assigning grades. Alaska Education Regulation 4AAC06115, Interscholastic Activities, was adopted by the State Board of Education on June 26, 1994, the purpose of which, and this is an excerpt, is to provide a procedure that enables school districts to promote and govern interscholastic activities effectively, economically, and fairly, while keeping those activities in their proper perspective educationally. Under the proposed legislation, the legislature, rather than school districts, regional associations, or Alaska School Activities Association, would be setting policies for interscholastic activity participation. 53 member school districts in Alaska, represented through the Alaska School Activities Association, are opposed to the passage of H. Bill 369 for the points specified above. If House Bill 369 is passed by the legislature, schools and ASAA will need some time to amend the rules and to adopt new procedures. The ASAA Board of Directors and regional associations hold their final meetings of the year during March and April. So some of the associations have already finished their meetings, and the ASAA Board will meet in 2 weeks in Bethel. So implementing such a major change by August 1st of this school year, when our activity season starts, will be extremely difficult. And once the school year begins, we must have all changes in place so that all activities programs are treated fairly, so we're not treating some sports seasons differently than others. It is my recommendation that changes to interscholastic eligibility rules resulting from legislative action not have an effective date of July 1st, 2013 if House Bill 369 is passed. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. It's certainly, you certainly represent quite a few people. Any questions from committee of Gary Matthews? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Master. Matthews, one of the issues that we'd been involved in the Kenai Peninsula recently was, or in the last couple of years, was looking at participation at another school that offers a sport. If the bill is written, would be in effect, would that limit your ability to allow the participation in either football or hockey at a school separate than the nearest school where you would participate in, you know, basketball or wrestling or other small team sports, since it says the same school?
Well, that's a hard question to answer exclusively around the state. In the peninsula, the way it has worked is that these small schools are all part of the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. So those kids have the opportunity to form cooperative. Those smaller schools have the opportunity to form cooperative teams with the larger schools. And that currently is happening with Homer High School and with some small Old Believer schools just north of Homer. And that would continue to change. This House Bill 369 would not really affect that. The effect the House Bill 369 has is on private homeschools and on the statewide correspondence programs such as IDEA, Raven, PACE, and so forth, where school districts hold their own, actually sponsor programs for students not only within their districts, but for correspondence students outside of their districts. And this bill would directly affect those and private homeschools. The way private homeschools currently exist are those private homeschools may become members of ASWA, and their kids can then represent homeschools in many sports and activities. It depends on what the sport and activity is. Football and hockey are usually restricted because those are team sports. So I don't see House Bill 369 as really affecting what currently goes on the peninsula.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And I understand, Representative Sattler, would you want to, do you have a question or a thought for Gary Matthews?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, for the record, Dan Sattler, House District 18. I'd like to ask Mr. Matthews if he's reviewed and has a position or any thoughts on the first section of the bill regarding concussions.
Yes. The first part of regarding concussions is a little different than what we had hoped for. Our original request was to eliminate four words in the House Bill 15, which was passed last year, and those four words were on the four words that we talked about and is currently certified, because the state of Alaska does not certify physicians or medical providers in concussion management, and that was evident last year when the bill was passed, but we were not successful in having that part of it clarified. We can live with the current revision, which actually removes and is currently certified as verified in writing or electronically by the qualified person. We had hoped that the as verified in writing or electronically by the qualified person could stay in the bill, because we think that tends to protect school districts and puts the liability on the medical provider to say whether he or she is qualified, rather than having the school district have to make that determination. But we can live with the current amendment, although it's not our preferred wording.
Gary, I see a lot of nodding heads here. That sounds like a really good observation. Representative Sattler, any other question of Gary Matthews?
No, sir.
Any other question? Representative Feige.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You had a question, I guess, about the effective date being the 1st of July 2013. If we were to pass this bill, more than likely it'd go into law by the 1st of July 2012. Is a year not enough time to prepare?
Through the chair, this is Gary Matthews. The way our process works with rules making is Alaska School Activities Association has six regions which have representatives on our board of directors, plus a representative of the School Boards Association, the Superintendents Association, and the Student Government Association. Rules are proposed changes are brought forth from various entities, including regions, to the board, and there's a hearing process which is undertaken, and if that change passes muster, then the board will implement the change, and any effective dates of rules changes are, unless it's so minor as to be fairly insignificant, are always the following year. But the situation we're in now is, once our board meets here in 2 weeks, they're not going to meet again until after the school year starts, which will be in October of next year. So any rule changes that go into effect for this coming school year, 12-13, have to be approved by the board in this month. And so if not, we'll end up with a situation where if this passes and there's an effective date partway through the school year next year, then we may start off with football and volleyball living under one set of rules, and then partway through the school year, wrestling, hockey, basketball living under a different set of rules. And so my concern is, if this passes, that we'd be able to start fresh at the beginning of a year and get through our process. There are so many unknowns in such a major change in our eligibility rules that we're going to have to go through and analyze the student eligibility rules, not only the where the student lives, but how it affects schools as far as checking student eligibility, as far as transfer and grade point average and attendance and progress toward graduation and homeschools and so forth. So there's a lot of things to be put into place to make such a major change. And my concern is, if it's when the concussion bill was passed this last year, House Bill 15, the effective date, I think, was August 26th. And that really affected physicians more than schools at the time. And we put in a temporary process. We knew it was coming. But to make a major eligibility change like this, we're going to need a school year to go through and make the changes and let everybody know and inform them, because there's going to be a lot of processes that have to be changed if these non-enrolled students can come and participate at a school. Make sure that the school systems, the districts, aren't going to subject themselves to penalties for using students who don't meet eligibility rules. So we need the time to get those processes in place if this bill does pass.
Representative Feige, then Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to follow up then, your organization, you know, most nonprofit organizations have annual meetings and maybe quarterly meetings, but they also generally have provisions for special meetings of the board. Is that not possible with your organization?
Through the chair, Representative Feige, it is possible, although once the school year is out, our board members, many of them travel or not available. They're mainly school people, teachers, administrators, usually aren't available. We've not had luck trying to have board meetings in the summer. It's not just whether the rule gets put into place, the procedures are the concern, because we're going to have to work through the school districts how this thing is going to be implemented. There literally are thousands of private homeschool kids around Alaska who may end up wanting to participate at their nearest public school. And we're going to have to develop processes and procedures under which public schools can accept these students for athletics and make sure that the students are following these homeschool students, following the same set of eligibility standards that students, all the other students in the state have to follow. And at the schools, for example, East Anchorage High School, if it has 10 homeschool students on its football team, East Anchorage High School has to notify us that these kids meet all the standards. And so we're going to take some time to work through the process so that these schools know how to do this. It's not just as simple as saying, right now, these students are in their school. Currently, they're enrolled students, so they have information on these students. So nothing's going to happen over the summertime to speak of, because this we work on the school year calendar. Once school's out, practically impossible to make contact with school people. And we start up with, even though we operate during the summertime, we don't really have contact with schools until right before the beginning of football season, which is usually the third week of July. It's virtually not possible to communicate with anyone in the schools after school's out. I think in Anchorage School District, it's been May. Most school districts are out in May or
very
latest early June.
Gary, Representative Wilson has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gary, what about if we had two different effective dates? One effective date for Section 1 and another effective date for Section 2, because wouldn't you want Section 1 to become effective immediately?
And Gary, please try to be concise. We have a full schedule today.
Through the chair, to Representative Wilson, yes, that would be ideal if we could have two different effective dates.
Okay. We can do that.
Okay. Representative Pruitt.
Yeah, Gary, please, as concise as possible, can you help me understand what we should expect to be the burden on this schools, the school administration as it comes to paperwork, and the time that this will be for, and just give me an average, one student at a high school, what would you expect? What could an administrator expect?
Well, a kid shows up wants to play in the football team. So the school has to determine whether the kid meets statewide eligibility standards. And that includes attendance, includes grades, and includes transfer, and there's a whole bunch of different things. And so the burden on the school will be to make sure that a student meets those standards, and the only way they're going to get that information is from parents or from the other, if it's a correspondence program, through the correspondence program. So it's going to depend on how responsive the private home schools or the statewide correspondence programs are, how responsive they are to the school, East High School, for requests for information.
Okay, Representative Pruitt has a follow-up question.
Yeah, I want to follow up. So I know, obviously, there are currently homeschooled students that play, for instance, in the Anchorage School District, my school district. How does this I guess I need to fully understand the difference in what we're asking to do here as opposed to what's possible. I know this is – my understanding is this is based off the issue that took place with Chugiak High School. But I'm trying to understand what the change is, how this potentially could be better, or in your view, just tell me the basic changes between current and what this would do.
Representative Pruitt, through the chair, right now in the Anchorage School District, the school district itself, the ASD, runs its own homeschool programs. They're part of the school district, and students can enroll in those programs, get their education at home provided by the Anchorage School District, and they're eligible to select a school of eligibility at their nearest school. That's the status quo. Under House Bill 369, students who are not part of the Anchorage School District homeschool program, these are private homeschool students, not affiliated with any entity in the state or school district, and those students under this would then be able to have the same benefits, play sports at one of the public high schools in Anchorage, even though they're not enrolled. And so that's the difference.
Okay. Follow-up question, then Representative Seaton.
One final question here. Could you foresee a student who is not meeting the eligibility requirements to play basketball, football at a school, could you see them enrolling, their parents enrolling them in some sort of homeschool program that maybe is not necessarily one of the ones that's recognized by the school district, so that they can quickly gain eligibility back? Do you think there could be a potential loophole there that could be utilized to be able to play a sport?
Representative Seaton, through the chair. Yes, and in fact, we've had that similar thing happen. In fact, it's even happened on the peninsula before, where a student or parent got disenchanted with the school or was removed from school for a discipline problem or whatever. Parent went home, or the kid went home, the parent started a homeschool, and a couple weeks later, the kid wanted to come back and participate through the homeschool program. At the time, we said that wouldn't be fair, because it gives that kid an extra advantage over a student who had to meet the standards at the school. So fairness is very important.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess my problem with Section 2, additional problem that I'm seeing, is you're talking about changing dramatically the state supervision of homeschools, as I see it, because if anybody that wants to participate in fine arts academically or in sports, the school districts or the state is now going to be supervising the curriculum, the attendance, and the progress towards graduation. It seems to me that before we implement Section 2, we should be having a very detailed conversation with homeschool parents across the state. Do you see that kind of a requirement for the districts to more fully integrate so that they can certify attendance and grades and progress towards graduation than is currently the case?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, I think that's very much a potential possibility that could happen in the future. That wasn't something I'd even considered because I think that would be a little ways down the road. But the thing that makes that probably more possible is the fact that schools will be held accountable for what they report on homeschool students. However they report this student's eligibility, the other school, East High, for example, will be held accountable. So that very well may be a result.
Thank you.
Okay, with no further questions, thank you, Gary. Good testimony. We really learned from your experience. Drema Fitzhugh, are you online? And if so, please identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Okay. My name is Drema Fitzhugh. I am representing the Chugiak Football Booster Club, and we are calling in today. Number one, we would like to thank Representative Sadler for presenting this bill. What I have done is I have asked Mary Lowe. I don't know if she has Craig, her son, on the phone with her, but I have asked them to call today to testify. Greg was the gentleman who was rendered ineligible in mid-season last fall. My purpose of call was basically just to express our appreciation to Mr. Sadler for his efforts here, and also to introduce Mary Lowe as the parent of Craig Lowe, who was rendered ineligible.
Do you have Mary in the room with you?
I don't. She has called in.
I have Mary.
Yes, I'm here.
I have Mary Valeris online. Mary Valeris, are you there? If so, identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Yes, my name is Mary Valier. I'm the mother of Craig Lowe. I would represent the Chugiak Boosters and the homeschooling parents and just the average parent out there that wants for their child to play sports, whether they're homeschooled or not.
Okay. Do you have a comment on the bill?
Yes. First of all, I would also like to thank Representative Sadler for introducing this bill. It's been very difficult for me, you know, because my son, Craig, who was ineligible for football season because he was homeschooled by a different school than the Anchorage School District was ineligible. And I'd like this bill passed because, and you know what, I heard Gary Matthews say, you know, he would like it next year. My question with that would be, my son is a senior. He is never going to have a chance again to play high school football. This was his first sport. He never played any other sports. He just came up to me one day and said, hey, Mom, I want to play football. And I said, okay, let's go check it out. He's a senior. He's never going to play again. And for the homeschoolers that are seniors this fall, and you know, if they want to play a sport, they're never going to be they're never going to have a chance again. And it's just, you know, everybody. I don't see a difference why an Anchorage school district homeschool student enrolled, you know, through that homeschool program. What's the difference between my son attending Galena? I mean, it's the same, basically. It's just in another district, you know. I mean, just, but we're at Chugiak, though. And I'm sorry, I'm really nervous. I don't like public speaking, so.
Mary, you're doing fine, and your genuine testimony is quite powerful. But if you just make a statement, we understand the urgency because your son is a senior, and even if we pass this, you know, effective, you know, down the road, it's not going to help him at all. So, is there anything else you'd like to add in terms of how we could? Yes, and just in terms of in favor or not in favor of the bill.
Well, I work with Campfire USA, and that's a before and after school child care. And I see children succeed, and I see children, you know, not succeed sometimes. And for every parent, we want our children to, you know, get the most they can, you know, before they become an adult, because I look back at my life and I was able to play sports. Coming from Chivac, there's no music out there. So here, while I've been in Anchorage for, since 2001, I tell my kids, pursue music, because I know how much music, you know, can help. Being able to play an instrument is like, wow, you know, to me, it's not the same as somebody from the city, you know, it doesn't, when you don't have it, it becomes that much more valuable to you. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes, the issue at hand here is sports, and we understand that you can get music instruction through a correspondence program, a homeschool program, where you can't get football through a homeschool program, and I think that is the distinction here. Any questions from committee? Mary, your genuine testimony is quite powerful. Representative Sattler, do you have a comment?
With the indulgence, Mr. Chair, Mary, if I could ask the questions we heard were a little bit about how a parent of a homeschool student could verify that student's eligibility and academic progress. Do you have any thoughts on as to how it might work if you were to verify your son or another child's progress towards graduation if you were attending a homeschool like IDEA?
Well, we have to turn in work samples like the end of each quarter. You know, there's testing like they take, whenever there's tests, I have to bring them in. And we have a teacher that we keep in contact with, whether it be by email or, you know, she'll call us and ask us what's going on or, you know, everything's okay. It's, I'm very fortunate to have my children that, you know, will do their work. And, you know, They do have a process where you have to, you know, be eligible too. You have grades and stuff that, you know, submit and stuff like that.
Okay. Okay, thank you for your testimony, Mary. You've certainly lived the event that inspired this whole process here. So we appreciate your thoughts on the matter, and we really, you know, while we have a bill before us, you have a son in your house, so we really want to respect that. Thank you, Mary. Pete Huffner from Cordova, are you online, Pete? And if so, identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Good morning, Education Committee. This is Pete Huffner. I'm president of the Cordova School Board. I'm also on the AASB Board of Directors, and I am the AASB representative to ASAA. Today I am going to oppose House Bill 369. It covers two diverse topics. They're diverse and divergent. The first is the concussion bill. This House Bill 15 needed to be amended because it has four words in it and is currently certified. Unfortunately, in the medical field, there is no regulatory process to certify that the medical community in the diagnosis and management of concussions. Physicians are expressing strong concerns about signing any version of the concussion release form. This amendment needs to be made to the concussion bill, which was originally House Bill 15. This second portion of House Bill 369 addresses homeschool students participating on and in public school activities. This portion has multiple problems. It might sound good, but it is not. Several of the issues with the homeschool, it would make it a paper nightmare trying to check weekly grade eligibilities wherever the homeschool grades come from. We've already seen that it's hard enough to track within your own school district whether a student is eligible. If a parent wants their student to participate in student activities, then all they need to do is enroll in the school. Cordova School District, if a student is homeschooled, they can enroll within the Cordova School District homeschool program and thus participate on any student activity. An interesting situation would develop. What if a local student versus a homeschooled student is trying out for a particular sport? What would happen to the displaced local student? Additionally, any student enrolled in a homeschool or public charter through the local school may participate in that school's student activities. Also, Representative Sadler the other day mentioned student activity fees. He was mentioning some numbers. In Cordova, our student activity fees are a little lower, but none of these figures add up to the total cost of a coach's salary, all the equipment that is necessary, all travel that is necessary. So these students, if a homeschooled student, it would not be funded. There is already a budget crunch on. We've lowered our, last year we had $100,000 from our general fund dedicated to student travel. This year we're lowered to $75,000. The homeschool students would not be taken into consideration. There's no funding for them. So if a student does want to participate and the parents feel that the school isn't, well, it's interesting with a homeschool student, sometimes parents don't feel that the public education is sufficient for their child, so they'll homeschool them. But then I question, do they feel that sports is, they want to participate in the public school system sports program? Anyway, I do oppose House Bill 369. I do support House Bill 15, the amendment to eliminate the four words and is currently certified. And I oppose the homeschool due to lack of funding. And if a student wants to participate, they're more than eligible by simply enrolling in that public school's homeschool system. And thank you very much to the House Education Committee for all your time and dedication towards education, our kids, our future. Thank you.
Representative Zeaton, yeah, I have a question for Pete.
Yes, I know we had a question on effective date. If we were talking about strictly the first section of the bill, which is the four words and is currently certified, do you foresee any difficulty on an effective date? On any kind of an effective date, I mean, an immediate effective date or 90 days, does that have any effect on ASAA's ability to implement the change?
And I am a board member, so I don't want to speak for us. I can't speak for us. I'm not the president. But, yes, those four words, it needs to be removed as soon as possible. Doctors are shying away from the fact that they don't want to sign on this because there is no verification or there's no certification process. The sooner that that is eliminated out of there, the sooner it will make it clear for doctors that they can go ahead and diagnose and manage concussions without worry.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pete. And we do recognize you, Pete. I know you're always on top of the issues and, very alert as to what's going on, not only in Cordova, but also statewide. Representative Sisson has a question of you, Pete.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And, Sharon Sisson here. And my question to you is that I am looking at the fiscal note here on this bill, and it says that there is no cost to the education and that department. So my question is, you're talking about the costs, and can you explain exactly how those costs might come in to the department? Because that's what we're wondering. Or is it the and I don't get that sense in what I've seen. Is that something that's carried by the parents themselves?
Representative Sisson, I think that we might be able to answer that question better here. I'm not sure Pete knows the answer to that. My understanding is that that fiscal note is to the Department of Education itself.
Sure. And I'm wondering if he knows where does his thinking come from on
okay.
this?
Okay. Do you have a observation or thought on that, Pete?
Yes, I do, Representative Dick. Through the chair, Representative Sisna, I am very aware of our budget process here in Cordova. One of the things that I see is that we have, as I said, we have dedicated $100,000 towards student travel. These costs are so our students can travel. Different districts have higher budgets. I noted at the ASA meeting, I saw that North Slope Borough was cutting their travel budget by $540,000. The original travel budget was $2.65 million. There's a lot of costs associated with student activities. These students travel in a lot of rural districts, and these funds are from the general fund, from that $56.80, the dollar amount from the base student allocation. Where do we get our dollars? These funds are then go to student activities. There's sections within our budget for student activities. Student activities also, there's coaches' fees. Representative Sadler said the buildings are there. Unfortunately, we have to heat the buildings, turn the lights on for all these sporting activities. There is a considerable cost to student activities. We know as school board members and as educators that student activities keep our children engaged. But so we're willing to put out money. There's a lot of fundraising in Cordova that we have to raise money for student travel. Homeschooled students would not, this is, I don't know if it's an unfunded mandate, but these homeschooled students do not bring any funds with them. The student in Chugach, for example, his money went to Galena. It did not go to Anchorage School District. He simply could have enrolled within the Anchorage school system, and he would have played. There would have been no eligibility as far as I saw.
Representative Sisna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, you mentioned unfunded mandate, you're school board member. Is this funding for the travel something that comes from the state, or does it come from your community? Does your community do then the raising for any of those kinds of costs?
Yes, Representative Sisna, through the chair. We do have a certain portion of our funds. As I said, last year was $100,000 we dedicated to student travel. This year is $75,000. The rest of the money is then fundraised through the community. And so a portion, for example, our high school volleyball team, they needed to raise $21,000 this year to travel, and the school funded them, I believe, $10,000. So a portion of the travel costs are funded, but with declining fund or with our funding situation, we had to decrease that, and thus more is going to have to come from our community. But a certain amount of that travel money is from our general fund, and it does support our student activities.
Pete, I was in Cordova, I was really impressed with the degree to which your community is really making the school happen. I mean, that's how you had the superintendent of the year and the teacher of the year, and you're really attracting attention in terms of a model statewide. But I guess the thought crosses my mind, and I just throwing this out, if you're doing a community fundraiser, I have a hard time to imagine a homeschooler's parents not being involved in that same fundraiser. If they're part of the community and a taxpayer in that community, they would certainly be part of that fundraiser, contributing and soliciting. Representative Sadler had a comment, though.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Huffner, just kind of going backwards for a sec, you did said you do support the concussion provision, Section 1. I wanted to make sure and clarify that you would agree to, as Mr. Matthews had, to eliminate those four words plus the rest of the language in Section 1. As verified in writing or electronically by the qualified person. I want to make sure and get that clear that you do support that.
Representative Sadler, through the chair, as far as, you know, I'm not a legal expert by any stretch of the imagination or legislative. And from what I understand and is currently certified is what needs to be taken out. Gary Matthews might be able to clarify that verified in writing or electronically by the qualified person. As far as my knowledge, the thing that needs to be changed is that end is currently certified, as there is no certification process. The verified in writing, I'm not certain, exactly certain. I believe that is to clarify that. Yeah, as I say, I'm not exactly clear on that particular sentence.
And if I may,
Representative Sadler,
and kind of taking your points in reverse order, I would also observe that some of the same arguments about the implementation that you cite in opposition to Section 2 would seem to apply to the regular local school students. For example, as the chairman has said, that certainly homeschool students participating in local sports would be involved in fundraising. And second, you mentioned that there is a burden of eligibility proof for students. There currently is the similar burden of proof in students who are enrolled in public schools. There is a program of proving eligibility would apply to homeschool students as it currently does to locally enrolled students. I don't see there being much differentiation between the two.
Okay, well, I'd like to, there's been good active debate here, but we did do this so that those who had time constraints could testify. We do need to move on. We're going to set aside HB 369 and move on to the confirmation hearing. And I bet Dale Anderson has learned a lot about concussions and eligibility here. So we'll take up consideration the qualification of Dale Anderson as the governor's nominee for the Board of Regents, University of Alaska. Dale, wait a minute. Brief of these.
He's here.
Brief of these. Taking me back to order, and Dale, please forgive me for not recognizing you're in the room. Identify yourself for the record, and tell us a bit about your background and why you want to serve on the Board of Regents, sir.
Thank you, Representative. Thanks for the opportunity to come before you this morning. My name is Dale Anderson. I was first came to Juneau with my parents in 1953. I grew up here, went to high school, graduated, went off to college, came back, and since 1974 I've been involved in a number of different enterprises.
Excuse me, Dale, we have a lot of background noise and I have a hard time. I really want to, would you, a little bit louder, that would help me.
Okay.
Thank you, and right into the microphone if you would.
My mom has accused me many times of having too soft a voice. But so I grew up here, went to college, came back, and I've been involved in a number of different enterprises in Juneau and the surrounding area. I also served in the public sector as an assemblyman for the city of Juneau, and I also was in the served as a legislative aide for a couple of years for the House Finance Committee, and then also as a commissioner for Limited Entry Commission. So there's I have a rather eclectic resume, but that's I think to my advantage, because it's given me the opportunity to create a very good network of people throughout the state of Alaska, and has given me a perspective of both private sector and public sector and how they relate to each other. For the university, this has been a dream of mine for a long time to be able to serve in this capacity, and would love to have the approval of the committee and then onto the floor vote as well. I'd be glad to answer any particular questions that you have.
Representative Sisson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question is that, yes, it sounds like I did read your resume, and a very eclectic experience, which is wonderful. And it's especially wonderful in Alaska because we're the only Arctic state, and we really haven't embraced that to the extent we need to. And what we know is things are happening very, very quickly up north, and that it's either going to be people from other parts of the world and other parts of the country that help Alaska out, or it's going to be our own people who really understand it. The people who understand it the best in terms of what it's like working in the far north are the people from there. So it's really very, very important for all of our educational systems to really be bringing in and helping the population that really hasn't been brought in the way that with the respect for their knowledge, and to have them be a big part of the educational system. So can you speak to that? Because your eclectic background probably has your own ways of looking at this.
The university research that is going on now is the very base of the Arctic research that needs to be at the base of the decision-making process for our state and those around it. And certainly worldwide, there's a group of scientists that have put together ideas on their experiences in the Arctic. So we certainly recognize that. This is an area that, you know, I haven't yet had the opportunity to really broach with the research folks at the university, but I certainly support Arctic research. And
Mr. Chair?
All of them?
And really where I'm kind of going is research. The research arm is extraordinarily important. First, Alaskans are the ones who for thousands of years have been here and really understand how to survive it. And that's the weather isn't going to change that drastically. Maybe clearing, but it's still going to get very cold. There's things that need to be known that scientists sometimes aren't going to be dealing with. And we need to bring that into the educational system in a way we haven't, I think. You may know more.
At this time, I don't know more, Representative Sisson. I understand your question, and I would certainly be happy to look into it and get back to you.
Representative Pruitt.
Thank you. How are you doing, Dale?
Thank
Good
you.
To see you here. A question that I have related to the university system is how do you view it? Do you view it as one university or as three universities underneath an overall arching umbrella?
The university system that we have right now, from an outside perspective, I see that there is what I consider at this juncture. First of all, I don't bring a preconceived agenda to the board. What we get to meet next week or in 2 weeks in Kenai. But what I see now and the discussions I've heard in doing research is that right now we have some very distinct universities. We have UAS, here, we have UAF, and we have UAA. And right now, I have sensed a competition between them that I think is not real healthy as far as looking after our interests to build our facilities at particular campuses. I would much rather see a large umbrella, unified system, and so that's the direction that I would like to go. I think it's one for all for one, I believe, in our university system.
Follow up?
Yeah, one comment, and then actually just one more question after that. And I tend to agree with you on that. One of the concerns that I have is, I don't have a problem with a certain one of our campuses specifying in some sort of item, whatever it is, maybe Southeast down here, it's the marine aspect. I mean, I don't have a problem with those individuals, but I continually have heartache is when a kid that has grown up in Alaska decides they want to go to school at UAA to get some credits started, but they ultimately want to finish in UAF, and the credits won't transfer. I'll hammer this till the cows come home, as long as I continue to encounter people in the university that give me pushback on that, because it's very frustrating. I have students that come up to me constantly just mad as can be because they tried to go to their own university and they moved within their university system and they couldn't transfer. And I've had professors in my own university that said, well, we see it as different universities, it's the same process. We throw a crap load of money into this university system to have people come back at me like that. So I'll continue. That's just my little diatribe on that particular issue. I appreciate where you come from, but it frustrates me beyond belief. The last question I want to ask is, how do you view is the best way to go forward with university? And specifically, you know, each year we deal with here, of course, the university budget is large, it's growing, and there's a lot of conversation on how do we get to the next phase of being a more world-class university. We'll need substantial amounts of money. How do we get the various programs? Of course, then there's also how do we balance moving forward with a potential decreasing budget that could come based on the fiscal responsibility that we have as a legislature and our, of course, you know, oil revenues, et cetera. How do we balance that with becoming or moving more into, which we've done, I think, very well in the last 15 years, a world-class university system that people throughout the world want to be a part of?
I've just begun the orientation program with the staff and administration at the university, and it's a big, steep learning curve. And I have seen the growth of the university over the last 10 years, we'll just take the last 10 years, as one of being, let's grow this thing, let's move ahead, let's have great inputs. When I spoke with President Gamble earlier this week, the focus is not away from growth, but it is strengthening what we have, I think, and that's the message that I wanted to hear from him and convey to him push that I'm going to try to do at the university. I think we have a great base right now, but I think we're spread too thin, and I think by increasing the depth of what we have right now, the relationships, that's where I think over the next couple of years and the discussion about budgets, they're very conscious about growing budgets, and I'm a fiscal conservative. I would like to really strongly look at the budget and see, you know, the answers to education is not just pouring more money into the bucket. It is creating a deep knowledge of what we have available to us at this point. So and the excitement that I saw with the staff, I think there's a new enthusiasm to create the quality of what we have rather than the quantity.
I appreciate it, Dale. And just so you know, I mean, I've had the chance to interact with Dale outside of just here, and I think he'll be a welcome addition to the Board of Regents. So that's again, my little personal comment
back there. Representative Sisno.
Yes, just a real quick follow-up, and this is really just look at it as a little envelope with a comment in it to take with you when you're getting trained up and to remember. And that is, I actually started here realizing I needed a master's in public administration. So started immediately at UAA and realized very well over the years that, as I'm slowly getting through, that here's a university here in the spring when I'm in session. And, hey, I could take classes there and work on my public administration degree. No. And it's, they all say, chancellor after chancellor have said, oh, yeah, we transfer. But what happens is, in programs like that, they change the numbers. So it isn't the same course. It may be the same subject. It's not the same course, which means you can't do it from UAA. Actually, from UAS, you can. They've got it worked out. So that's what we have to work on. All of our schools have to really work to make positive that in a state where we travel a huge amount, we work in different places, that you can keep working to your degree no matter where you are.
Thank you. Representative Kawasaki, then Representative Sherman.
Thanks. Thanks for being here, Dale. Thanks for accepting the commitment to serve on this board. I just have a generalized question about how you make decisions and how you make daily decisions or how you would make decisions as a member of the board.
First of all, I'm going to make the statement again that I'm not bringing any preconceived agenda to the first board meeting. It's a learning curve. And I am, I believe I'm open-minded. I believe that anytime there's a public board such as this, such as the legislature assembly, there are going to be differing opinions, of course, and that's what people want. People want to hear differing opinions to come to a point in the middle, so to speak, of where it meets the public's needs. So I am pretty vocal about my opinions. But the thing is that when you walk away from a discussion, when you walk away from a series of negotiations, I still want to be able to go to coffee with that person that I disagreed with. I have to respect their opinion. I have to respect that they're coming from a different place in life. Because we have different opinions doesn't mean we're any less of a person or more of a person. And so it's a collaborative effort. That's what I've tried to do throughout my career in public service.
Thank you. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, we often talk about world-class university and those kind of things, and I'm wondering your perspective because, you know, the legislature has been somewhat frustrated in that the university, when it looks at research, does not, and hiring professors and all, does not put teaching to the top priority. And, of course, one of the things that we're doing in funding this university for is to have the next generation of Alaskans be well-educated and go through the system. We have a terrible completion rate in this state, and part of that is because we don't engage the individual professors with individual students. And I served on the University Higher Education Task Force. What we found from across the nation was that the biggest thing that we could do is have the individual professors, no matter what their field, but have individual contact with a certain number of students that they maintain through that relationship through the university. And so I guess I would like to hear your perspective on whether you think that the university should put more emphasis on professors when they're hiring them to let them know that that Alaska expects them to be engaged with students more than just their own private research.
Here's my perspective coming from the private sector. From the private sector, all the businesses that I've ever owned have been focused on client service. If you don't have client service, you don't have a customer next week. If you don't give them what they need or in the method that they need it, they won't come back. I think the university, and I heard this when I started expressing that to the people that I've talked with at the university, I've heard a real receptive spirit to that. And I think once we truly identify the student as the client of the university, that is our client base. There is no reason to have the university if we're not turning out students on the other end with a quality education, either in academia or in workforce development. So I think I fully agree with your the path you are going as far as involvement with the people. Because if I have a hard time talking with somebody who is giving me this information, this trying to teach me, and then the door is shut at 3:30 because that's when class is over, I think that's a serious problem. But I think once we identify the student as the client of the university, who we are truly serving, I think there's going to be a lot more involvement in that respect that you're referring to.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Kawasaki.
Thanks. I don't want to take this negative, but I graduated from the university. My parents graduated from the university, and I've had a soft spot in my heart for the university for a long time. One of the things that I've seen, maybe not only nationwide, but even sometimes here in Alaska, is that devaluing of a college education, and part of it is, well, there's competing proposals, not quite enough money. Voc-Tech is a focus right now, seems to be talked a lot. The university's mission, or at least the campus's mission up in Fairbanks, has sort of changed with having a career in technical CTE. They changed the name of the campus. I can't remember what it's called now. But what's your thoughts about the university as a four-year institution? You're going to be there for 8 years. You'll probably outlive the president. You'll be out. I mean, you're going to. I mean, not outlive, but you'll be there for longer than the president might be. You're there now, but for 8 years you'll be there. And what's your thoughts on the university as a four-year research advanced institution that it has been since even before statehood? And where would you like to take it, being on the board for 8 years?
Again, I think it goes back to my earlier comment about creating quality, and I think that quality is where we need to center our ideas in developing a quality research and quality academia and quality workforce development. I mean, if we spread ourselves too thin, I think we hurt the end product, because we're not able to fund, we're not able to position people in those areas. So creating quality in our product is definitely where I will be heading. I'm pretty well a bottom line person, and that's top quality education for Alaskans. It has to be our bottom line.
Thank you. I have a thought, and I've been heard to say more than once that of our current ninth graders, only 7% of them are going to graduate from a 4-year program. But that doesn't mean that I demean that at all. I mean, we desperately need people. I'd like to double, triple, quadruple that number. But at the same time, if I look at the university budget overall, and I believe I focus mostly K-12, that if we look at the cost per student, you know, K-12 across the state is somewhere around $20,000. But if we did a look at the cost per student at the university, I guess I don't want to do that right now, but I think if we did take a look at that, and the number would probably be staggering. And I really do believe that while it's not about dollars, it really should help us decide where we're going to put our money. We need to make sure that students. It's almost, when I was a young man, I had to take care of both ends of a cow in the middle too to get myself through college. But it was possible, and it seems for many young students nowadays that it's not even possible. Even with that summer work and all the jobs, all the help, it's still not possible. Because the cost of the university is just so high. And again, I'd love to quadruple the number of four-year graduates. So I would just ask you as you go forward that if you would look at with that kind of in mind as to how we can make it more possible. And at the same time, and I'll be just really, really, just really honest, you seem like you're extremely intelligent and a very gentle person. So my question of you is, committee, we've recently talked about whether eighth graders are really ready to do simultaneous equations. And but we do have a simultaneous equation in front of us as adults, and that is we have the cost of living is going up, and we have the throughput declining, and we have a simultaneous equation, and there is a intersection of lines out here, maybe just a couple years ahead of us. So my question of you, and this is just more of a challenge, I guess, is that I don't question your heart at all, but my question of you is, do you feel like you have the boldness to really confront the issues before those two lines intersect and to help align the university system up with the reality that we really do need to think about how we can make that four-year degree far more possible for students? And we might have to actually disrupt more than one apple cart. So I say it as a question, but it's really a statement.
Somebody famous said, speak softly, carry a big stick.
Good.
And I think if you look back to my history, I may speak softly, but I carry a deep sense of values in my heart. And when I am deliberating, I love open, frank, straight talk. And to get to the bottom line, what's best for the Alaskans. So.
Excellent answer. Thank you. Any other questions from the committee? Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I apologize. I was at a leadership meeting, and so this might have been brought up, and but I don't know. I feel that one of the things that could be worked on better at the university is preparing teachers. One of the things, especially if they go out into the bush, they have a real hard time retaining teachers, and part of it is because they're just not prepared for what they experience out there. And short from sending professors out there to spend some time, I don't know how to correct that so that the professors really understand what some of the teachers are experiencing if they go out in those areas. So I hope that's something you think about, because if that doesn't change, and that might be the next step.
Today, I have heard comments from all of you, and as Representative Cisna said, stick them in an envelope and bring them to the meeting with you. And I certainly will. I respect the input that each of you have given. And I don't want this to be only a discussion of problems. We have several things to celebrate at the university as well. There's excellent things happening, and Representative Pruitt, if I may, I have a little card here to give you, and this card was when I brought up the and Representative Sisson as well, when I brought up the subject of transferability of credits, I brought with me to that discussion a personal experience with my son when he went to University of Alaska as well. But I believe they are listening and this says, do you have a problem with transfer credits? Call 888. Here's a toll-free number that the university wants you to call. So they're very aware of the issues. And, you know, we have these cards. So this may be handy to have as well if your constituents are talking to you as well.
Thank you, Dale. Just a quick thought, to just follow up on Representative Wilson. I took, when I graduated from the university, degree in education, and my teaching and reading class was focused on The Great Debate by Chahl. And yet when I get out in the field, it took me 5 years to learn how to teach a child the difference between a B and a D. And that's really where the focus needs to be. It's good to have the, you know, philosophical, but we really, I'm agreeing with Representative Wilson, we really do need to have folks that have, you know, real time out there and are familiar with the issues. But we just ask you to carry that on. So any other, if there's no other questions, Dale, thank you. And don't be afraid to use that big stick.
All right. I'll try to speak a little louder.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. If Gary Baldwin is still...
Do we need a motion?
Excuse me.
We do need a motion.
I'm sorry. Representative Pruitt, will you move the confirmation committee report?
Mr. Chair, I move the confirmation report for Regent Dale Anderson from committee to be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. This does not reflect the intent of any member to vote for or against this appointee.
Okay, seeing no objection to the motion to move the confirmation report from committee, seeing none, motion is approved. There we go. Okay, now we'll get back on track. We're glad to have Assistant Superintendent Dan Walker online. Dan, are you still there?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I am.
I admire your endurance, sir. Dan's from the Lower Cuscombe School District. Please introduce yourself for the record. We have a PowerPoint presentation here, and Annette will walk us through as you give. Just tell her when to turn to the next slide, and we appreciate your patience, and we really are interested. I live on the Cuscombe, and you have a vested interest in what you're doing in this presentation. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, and thank you for the opportunity for us to be able to present. Superintendent Baldwin had to be out of town today, so he asked that I sit in his place. I'm here with the other Assistant Superintendent, Carlton Coons. My name is Dan Walker, and I'm the Assistant Superintendent for the instructional side of the programs here in the Lower Cuscombe School District. If we could go to the next slide. LKSD is the largest rural school district, the largest REAA in terms of students. We have just under 4,000 students in 27 schools located in 23 communities. Our students are 95% Native Alaskan. We have 82% of our students are economically disadvantaged, and 67% of them are limited English proficient. If you go to the next slide. This is the past 6 year performance data for our school district from 2006 through 2011. I would like to point out that while it shows that our graduation rate has gone down, I would point out that our number of graduates has gone up each year, and our enrollment has been quite steady, right around the 3950 to 4000 mark over those same years. I believe that that reduction in the graduation rate is due at least in some part to the changes in the way rates are calculated. That being said, we certainly want to acknowledge that we know that our scores are low, and we are doing everything possible And I'll get into that a little bit more a little bit later. I would point out also that on the graduation rate and the numbers of graduates, that one thing that the graduation rate calculation does not really take into effect are the number of fifth and sixth year seniors, and we have quite a few of those, and in fact we probably even have some that are 7 year. So our goal is to really make sure that regardless of that, of the statistics, that we're meeting the needs of all of those kids. I would also, as I get more into the presentation, we are showing some real promise with some of our new programs that we're doing and some of the changes that we have made. We could go to the next slide, please. We have many challenges in rural Alaska and in LKSD in particular, and two of the greatest challenges are student motivation and significant facility needs. We also would say that we are problem solvers and not victims of circumstance beyond our control. I often tell people that we have to own these problems and we have to find ways to engage our communities to solve them together. So there's not one single problem or a single solution. We have to look at the big picture and find ways to engage people. And I would just add that we're doing a lot of work with our advisory school boards in that realm. Some of the other things that are really important to us and that in some ways are challenges, the very strong need for early childhood and work with parents on parenting skills. I would say that NCLB has really narrowed our focus over the last 10 years or so, and we're working very hard to broaden that focus out so that we can meet the needs of all of our kids. If we could go to the next slide, please. We also have many assets in our school district. One of the greatest assets that we have is a very stable and supportive regional school board. I can't say enough how wonderful it is to work with that group of people. They absolutely get that we have to work together, we have to collaborate, and we have to find ways together to help kids succeed. We have great students and staff. I would point out that for a rural school district, we have pretty low turnover. For the last couple of years, we've been at around 12%. Last year, we dropped down to under 10%. And this year, we're going to be up a little bit, but probably somewhere in the 15% range. I think we've done a good job of hiring and retaining teachers. Part of the reason for that, I believe, is the next bullet point, which is a very robust and targeted professional development program. We don't believe in one shot or what we sometimes term drive-by professional development. It's sustained and ongoing, and we revisit things quite often. The next bullet is new construction, and I would say that we are very thankful for the new construction projects we've got. It helps tremendously when kids can go into a school that is inviting, they have up-to-date facilities and infrastructure. The next bullet point is our school social worker program. I believe we're probably one of the only school districts that I'm aware of that has social workers on staff. We have 9 social workers. They are itinerant and they work in our villages They're based out of Bethel, but they're in the villages a large majority of the time. And I believe that that helps us find those necessary supports to help kids so that they can learn. We could go to the next slide, please. For the last 3 years, we have been working on several initiatives. This school year is the first year that those initiatives have gone forward district-wide with all villages and all schools doing all of the initiatives. And that is part of our comprehensive school reform framework. One of those initiatives is PSYOP. PSYOP is a best practice for sheltered instruction. We have that large population of students that are LEP, and that PSYOP is one of the best practices for meeting those students' needs. Another initiative that we have been working on is our continuous progress model, coupled with a response to intervention, or RTI model. And along that same line is a dual language model. Many of our kids obviously come to us as UPIC speakers. What we have found over the last 10 or 15 years is that more and more our kids come to us without a strong language base in either language. So they're not really proficient in UPIC, and they're not really proficient in English. And so they have what we call a language deficit. And so that starts us out kind of behind the eight ball. And so we really need to find ways to boost and accelerate that learning at an early age. We have traditionally had a UPIC First Language program, one of the only places in the state that works at having instruction in the students' native languages. We are in a transition period now where we're going more to a dual language. We've done a lot of research on this, and we're very excited about the prospects that has. The third initiative that we have is increasing and improving our school climate and connectedness for kids, working on positive behaviors. This is a huge effort for us, and I strongly believe that it is the core foundation of what we need to build on for student academic success. If students do not feel that the school is a positive, fun, engaging place to be, then the chances of them checking out or dropping out go up pretty substantially. We could go to our next slide, please. I want to talk just a little bit about some of the innovative academic programs that we have been doing. LKSD, because of our geographic diversity and being so spread out, we depend a lot on the use of two-way video. Some of those courses, just as a point of information, include math, science, art. We have this year we added an AutoCAD program. We've added digital photography. We've added some career exploration at the junior high level. And we have a very strong robotics program. Part of that robotics program is also delivered over two-way video. We have highly qualified instructors that are in teaching studios here in Bethel at our central office, and cooperating teachers in our village schools. The robotics programs, we have really ramped that up in the last few years. And this year in particular, thanks to the additional CTE money that we received, we have really put an added emphasis on that, and really have a lot more schools involved in this program because of that, and it's been a huge help, and we've seen some great success with that. We have had some of our teams that have competed at the state level. We've had teams over the last few years that have won at the state level, competing against many of the large high schools in the state, and have gone on to the world competitions in Atlanta and St. Louis. So we're very excited about that program and the prospects that it has. Another innovative program that we're doing is we're really focusing on integrating art into our curriculum. We've been fortunate enough to have some art grants over the last several years, and those grants are ending, but we're going to be finding ways to keep that going. The art in the core curriculum areas, I believe, is finding ways to help engage kids. And the last bullet point there is our RANSET program. And I want to expand on that just a bit here in just a second, but I want to add on these innovative programs that we're working very hard at thinking outside the box, finding what we can do different to engage kids in quality programs that have high rigor, and finding ways to help kids be successful. We're wanting to find ways to control the conditions that we can. We know many of the conditions we don't have control over, but there are certain things we do have control over, and if we can control those and align them with strategies and activities that help kids be highly successful through highly engaging activities, then we believe that is one avenue that we need to exploit a little bit.
Dan, we have a question here. Several people are asking, what is RANSET?
Okay, if we'll go to the next slide, I will explain that to us.
We're engaged.
What's
it? Excuse me, Representative Sisson has another question.
Thank you very much, Mr. Baldwin. You're looking about innovative economic programs, and one of the things that I've seen that at some of our schools that really gets to innovation in a way that I think will get us the furthest is the team building, the working with people long enough so that you see who's got the strengths and how to use those strengths in a group. And competition doesn't normally do that. It doesn't really point to the fact that each of us have real strong parts to us. And are you working on that part too?
Well, yes, absolutely we are. And, you know, it's almost counter to the UPIC culture for there to even be competition. And so we have a natural avenue for us to do that collaborative work. And that collaboration, I think, really transcends our entire organization at this point, from the very top reaches with the administrative team here and the school board, right down to the classroom. We're very focused on collaboration, building classrooms, and our dual language program. It's a major part of that program is pairing kids up so that they have the ability to work with each other and learn from each other. And one of the things we see with that program is once it gets implemented, the kids actually go home at the end of the day quite tired because they're actively engaged in a lot of academic activities. And so they're doing a lot of speaking. We know that with limited English proficient kids that one of the ways to improve their proficiency is for them to actually be doing the talking. So it takes the focus off of the teacher and puts it on the kids for a majority of the time in those classrooms. So I would say yes, we're all over that. We absolutely agree with that concept. So Yes, and I hope that answered your question.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead, Dan.
So the RANSET program is it is a Rasmussen-funded ANSET program, so the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program. And we received a grant from the Rasmussen Foundation, and we have multiple partners in this, and I will get to that in just a second. But the RANSET is the acronym for the Rasmussen-funded ANSET program that is targeted for our village-based students. The goal of that program, if we could go to the next slide, is to meet the academic needs of students from our surrounding villages while still allowing those students and families to be closely connected to the rich cultural experience of the village. And we have kind of termed that culturally grounded plus being academically strong, we hope will lead to post-secondary success. And if I can, I just want to elaborate a bit on that. You know, for years and years, we had boarding schools in this region. And while we know that concept worked for some kids, for a large majority of kids, it did not work. And when the Molly Hooch schools in the villages came about, that added an avenue for more kids to be engaged in education. But it has done a great job for a large majority of kids. But we also know that over time that we're still losing kids. And I may deviate just a little bit here from the slides because I think this is really important for the committee members to hear. We are looking at ways that take some of the successes of both of those programs and kind of meld them into what we have termed kind of a blended learning or a hybrid high school effect or model. And the way the RANSET program works is that the students in that program, they get engaged in some intro activities. And so, for example, the semester before they enter the program, they come into Bethel and they work with the University of Alaska through their ANSET program, and they do a computer build. And that is the initial activity that they do. And if they, at that time, they sign kind of a contract that they will stay in the program and they will take these high-level academic classes. And in exchange for that, they get to keep that computer. Those students then, in the summer before they do their first semester of the RANSET program, they go to UAA for an acceleration academy, and it's a 6-week academy, and they go in as a cohort and they work together and they take these high academic classes. And it's kind of a way to prepare them and give them an experience that is short enough that, you know, they don't get homesick, they don't want to back out of the program, yet it's rigorous enough and supportive enough that they can find some success. Those kids then come back to LKSD, and their first semester in the program, they leave their home village and they come to Bethel and they enroll in classes at Bethel Regional High School. And they enroll in a double blocked period of a higher level math class, a pre-engineering class, and a science class, either a physics or a chemistry class. And those kids, our experience, we're in our second cohort of kids. The first cohort of kids was, we started out with 10 kids, I think we ended with 8. But the real promise of that program, these were kids who were our ordinary village kids. They did not stand out. Yet they had met some of the basic requirements for math and science. For example, they had taken Algebra 1 by the end of their ninth grade and were ready to go into Algebra 2 or geometry. And that's one of the requirements for the program, is that they're ready for some of the upper level math classes. That group of kids created a supportive cohort, and they just absolutely blossomed that semester in Bethel, which was the first semester of this school year. And it really took, I think, all of us by surprise a little bit. We weren't expecting the absolute, they just blew the doors off of everything they were doing. And it surprised even the staff and the students at the Bethel Regional High School, because a lot of the kids they get from the village that come to the high school here in Bethel are highly transient. They're kids that have a lot of obstacles, a lot of challenges in their life, and they tend to not do that well. And so I think people had this idea that these kids that were coming in were much like the normal transient kids that we get, and that was absolutely not the case. These kids were leading the way. They were making straight A's in their class, taking chemistry, Algebra 2, and in some cases pre-calculus. These kids told us that when we interviewed them, and we have an ongoing support program with them, they told us that, you know, when in my village school, I'm in a really small group of kids, and I don't feel like I'm as challenged as I was when I came here to BRHS, where I had 20 or 25 kids in class with me. So those are some of the indicators that we're seeing. And it tells us that, you know, while we know that we have kids in our villages that absolutely have the skills and the academic ability, we need to think a little bit differently in how we structure our school day and our school years. And the other thing that we found is that there was still a strong desire for those kids to still be connected to their village. One of the downfalls of the boarding schools was it took kids completely out of their culture, and they didn't retain that identity, if you will. And so it's one of the things that we've identified that we need to do a little bit different. So I'm going to stop right there, because I want to give committee members a chance to ask us any questions about that. And then I can go on with some more of that if you would like.
Thank you very much. That was very, very informative. I'm taking the chair over for Representative Dick temporarily. He had to leave the room. He'll be right back. That is so exciting to me to hear what happened to the kids and how the teachers even reacted. Does it make them take a different look at every student, maybe?
I would definitely say that it is going to do that. You know, this program is really in its infancy right now. So I do think that's going to happen. I would like to add that, you know, we started with a pretty small cohort of kids. We wanted to have between 15 and 20 kids in this cohort and build from there. We have just finished our second round of recruiting for this program. The word, quite frankly, is spreading much because of these kids going back to their home villages and talking about the program and how excited they are about it. We now have, we're about halfway through the recruiting process, and we are going to have a waiting list for kids to get into this program. We're going to try to take 15 to 20 kids, but we're still already having a waiting list. And I want the really important thing I want to emphasize with this is one of the obstacles that we face with this program, one of the obstacles in us being able to move forward and expand this program is currently those students, when they come to Bethel, we have to house them with host families in the community. We do not have a facility or dorm space for those kids for us to house them, and that is a huge, huge obstacle for us right now. I know that one of our partners in this is Utlet Navit, which is the center here in Bethel that does a lot of the post-secondary training, apprenticeships, things like that. They are working to get dorm space. It was vetoed last year. I believe it is again in one of the budgets. We are very hopeful that will not get vetoed. It would absolutely be the boost that we need, one of the boosts that we would need to make this program go forward. Obviously, the other need that we're going to need is some level of support to be able to sustain that piece of it, the boarding school home, the added things that need to happen at the school here in Bethel. We need an extra teacher here. So we are applying for grants and things like that, but that dorm space, you know, if we have to continue housing kids with host families, there's going to be a natural limit to the number of kids that we can bring in just because of the number of host families that are available.
Okay, Dan, I will, Representative Allendick, I will, we have 14 minutes, so I would encourage you to pace yourself. Representative Sisson, do you have a comment?
Real quickly, in the host families, and the problem is not that the host families themselves are not available, but that you don't have enough of them. Is that correct?
I would say that is correct. Finding a host family that is willing to, take on that responsibility for a semester at a time, that's asking a lot of them. And we're fortunate enough that some of the kids have family members in Bethel, and they end up becoming the host family.
Mr. Chairman, may I ask a follow-up? And my follow-up question is, have you gotten host families involved at all in some way in the program that you got these students in? Because what it sounds like is all of a sudden the culture is being brought into the school in with kind of the equal level of respect that so many of those parents and their parents had taken away from them, because if you couldn't speak English well in school, you were looked down on, and they weren't supposed to speak their language. So there's a history here. It's a generational issue about school and rural students. So is it possible to bring families more in? It sounds like you've done it, but the host families would be learning some really big things.
Yes, I believe we have done that, and then, you know, the host we have throughout the semester, there are opportunities for all of the host families and kids to get together so that they can talk. But we also, many of the families, the parents of these kids, also come in and will attend and be there as well. So it is very much what you described, the families, the host families, the parents are involved. When we go to villages, we're actually having parents come up to us and ask us about this program and how do they get their kids into it. So we know there's a real desire out there to expand that program.
Great.
If I may, I want to go on to the flow chart just really briefly. There are the flow chart that is on slide 10 is a typical ANSEP flow chart where kids start in middle school with an ANSEP academy. We We do that with a lot of Lego robotics programs at the middle school level to help kids get more prepared for that. The RANCEP program is slightly different in that it's actually the spring of their sophomore or junior year where they come in and do the computer build and the acceleration academy. So it's slightly different than the ANSEP program, which we also have an ANSEP program that is just for Bethel students. The RANCEP program, to differentiate a little bit, is for our village-based students. So we're doing it for both groups of kids. The next slide talks about our partners. Obviously, the Rasmussen Foundation is a huge supporter of this. We have funding from them for next year. At that point, we're still applying for grants. The ANSEP program from UAA is involved. Of course, the school district and the Bethel Regional High School and Ute-Litnavit are all partners, and Ute is a huge supporter, and they handle a lot of the housing portion of it, and then they have a person who is there to support the kids. The National Academy Foundation is another partner in that, and they provide some support as well. The next slide talks about what each of those partners, the components that they take over. I'm going to skip on to the next slide. I talked a lot about the flow of the RANCEP kids in the program. This is just a slide that tells a little bit about how it works. You can see that at their junior year, they spend one semester in Bethel. Their senior year, they spend one semester in Bethel. They return their second semester of both of those years, and they graduate from their village high school. And we believe that's really important for that connectedness piece. The next slide is just really kind of talking about how all of these programs kind of work together and to kind of sync up so that we find success for those kids. And then the last slide, the RANCEP program really is about inspiring goals and ensuring students have the confidence and skills and the opportunities to meet those goals. I told you a little bit about the success of those cohorts and what we had when we interviewed those kids, what we found from them and why it was so inspiring to us and causing us to then think a little bit differently and what can we do now to expand on this and what are some other programs that we can develop to kind of model it after this to find some of those same successes. And we are doing that. We're actively working on some other programs that will be modeled somewhat after this, but may not be semester-long times for village students to be in Bethel, but maybe a week to 3 week periods of time. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I will end that part of the presentation, and we would be more than happy to answer any other questions.
Well, Dan, I would like to make a comment. I've been on that part of the world for 45 years, and I've observed the same thing that you're dealing with, that a major portion of teacher time is really spent on trying to motivate students rather than teaching them. And I've really pondered this for a long time. And I really believe there's a core principle amongst the Yupik people, and that is the principle of survival. And I really believe, too, that we heard a fantastic presentation last year. There was a joint meeting between the House and the Senate Education Committees, and we had an individual that presented to us the real facts, is that these students are not going to be competing against the students in Anchorage. They're going to be competing worldwide. And I think when we get our Alaskan students that live in isolated places and don't see that, to understand that this is really a survival issue and that there's more honors students in India than there are students in the United States, that I really believe they're going to be more motivated. I attended during when others were at the Energy Council. I went to the American Indian Charter School down in Oakland, California. My wife and I visited almost every classroom. No white students in there. They're all minorities, they're black, Hispanic, et cetera, you know, American Indian and Asian. And 100% of their graduates received letters of acceptance from highly accredited four-year college degree programs. I thought while I sat in that classroom, if I could video this and bring it back to some of our villages and say, these are the kids you're going to be competing against, I think they'd be shocked. It'd be shock and awe. And I really believe it would waken them to the fact that they are not going to be just competing with somebody down the river or up the river, but this is the world that they're going to be operating in. So I think that's something we look at down the road in terms of motivation. I realize that even within your villages, I was a construction foreman. Eek is totally different from Alaganuk. All the villages have their own character. So I realize even as you try one approach, you have to do it with a spectrum of approaches, because all the villages, even amongst Yupik people, are very diverse. So, but I do believe there's going to be pressure, even as our students have been, jumping into cell phones and iPads and the modern attire. We need to get them to realize that they need to also, if this pressure also for them to perform academically, because they just to take on the outward appearance of modern society isn't going to get them there. And if they want all of those personal attributes, there's a pathway they need to use to get there. And that pathway is the educational system that you're providing. I really believe you're doing everything in your power to make that happen. I really believe the RANCEP concept is excellent, because the Native people are engineers at heart. I mean, instinctively they are that, and I really believe you've tapped into a very important element that exists with not just the Yupik, but all the Native people, and just making practical applications and with innovations upon those practical applications. So I really believe I, like you, have a real high hope for the RANCEP program. Now that I've had my rant here, I'll Representative Sisna, then Representative Wilson, and we have 3 minutes.
Thank you. From Sharon Sisna, the thing that I agree with the chair on is that Alaskan rural students can, I hope not compete, but rather as a team, because that is in fact the huge strength of rural Alaska, is the fact that people keep returning to a part of the world that's the most expensive to live in and the hardest to stay living in and to actually survive in. But as a team, they've done it all these many thousands of years, and we need to learn from them, but they can do it. And you guys have, at your school, have tapped into that huge strength. Thank you.
And just if I could respond, Representative Sisna, I interviewed a young student who was in the AMSEP program, and her goal was to go back to Kotlik and build bridges so the people can get from, because Kotlik is divided, on either side of the river. So I think that's exactly what AMSEP and RANCEP are aiming for. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have one question and then a comment. Is there very much suicide in and around that area?
I would, and I knock on wood every time I say this, in our school district, the villages here, with at least with the school age kids, we have been extremely fortunate not to have any that I am aware of, or is it Carlton's telling me?
Do you want me to?
Yeah, if you would.
Yeah, this is Carlton Coons. I'm the assistant superintendent for personnel and student services in LKSD. And Dan had mentioned in his report about the school social worker program that the district has. We view it very much as a two-pronged focus. We have the academic rigor element that we have renewed and are developing and redeploying things like the RANSEP program, other kinds of hybrid high school, combination boarding school, village school programs. But in addition, we focus a lot of energy, a lot of resources on the personal, social, emotional aspect. And we have a staff of 9 professional master's level social workers who itinerate. And it has been highly successful in literally in an area with a high suicide rate. We are very fortunate in that the suicide prevention measures that are in place have resulted in the last 3 and I believe 4 years of 0 suicides within the school population. And I believe that says something for the kind of programs that are in place academically, school engagement, school climate, but also the programs that work directly with students and with their teachers in identifying issues as they surface.
That's just absolutely wonderful, and I really commend you for doing that. I think that you'll see as the RANSEF program increases and you have more students, they will have more hope, and I think for what they can do. And I think this will make a difference also because of the hope that you give the students that, golly, I can do this. And it just gives them a different outlook in life, I think. So thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. We are out of time. The Education Committee will recess to the call of the chair. Anticipate a meeting between 6:10 and 6:15 this evening. So.
We're going to have a meeting.
We're recessing to the call of the chair.
Okay.
Today is Wednesday, April 4, 2012. Time is 6:30. Present are Representative Feige, Representative Seaton, Representative Peggy Wilson, Representative Sisner, Representative Kawasaki, Representative Pruitt, and myself, Representative Alan Dick. We do have a quorum, and making sure cell phones are off. Continuing discussion of HB 369, student participation in sports, which we began this morning. Representative Pruitt, will you move CS for HB 369 version X?
Mr. Chair, I move the CS for HB 369 version X, which is dated today, 4/4/12.
And I'll look good for discussion, for clarification on the difference.
Okay. Representative Sadler, will you explain the changes in the CS, okay. Sir?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you to the members of the committee for coming back for a second shift this evening. For the record, Representative Dan Sadler, House District 18, Chugachik River J Bear. I've got my aide, Lynn Smith, with me. You got work draft section, version X before you. There is a new title, first off, which run through the changes. The new title reflects that this bill now covers all interscholastic activities as opposed to simply sports. In section one, the change is deletes, as we talked earlier, the only language now being deleted is the four words and is currently certified, which is in page one, line eight. Section two now refers to interscholastic activities, not just sports, at Representative Wilson's suggestion. I would note that the student is still the party responsible to provide all required documentation to the school of their eligibility. The burden of proof remains with the student. No proof, no play. The requirements remain the same. There is one exception with the necessity of medical documents. They would only be required for those activities which require them. Previously referred to medical documentation, like for sports. I don't think you have to have a physical for the chess club or for a glee club. On page 2, line 21, we delete the word external and insert the word recognized. The reason for that is the term more commonly used in statute is recognized, accredited.
Mr. Chairman?
No, I'm sorry. We're
going a little fast.
Yeah, okay. That's my complaint to other people presenting. I'm sorry, so I'll back up.
Representative Seaton, what was your question?
We're going too fast. Too fast. I can't follow this.
Representative Seaton, please back up.
This is in the original bill?
I lost you on page 3, enough. Line 21. I didn't find those words.
This is Lynn Smith, staff representing Sadler. External was in the original bill. Representative Sadler was presented with some information that external wasn't really the right word to use, so legal replaced that with the word recognized.
And we're on which line there?
Page 2, line 21.
And now it's in line 23.
Line 23.
Page 2,
line 23.
It is line 23.
Right.
Recognized. Okay, recognized accrediting body.
Okay. And also on page 2, line 30, there was concern raised that before it said they had to have 5 credits. Not all classes are considered a credit, and we wanted them to have 5 classes, so we replaced credit with classes. Okay, in the original bill on page 3, there was a section C that said if a student in grade 12 had passed all parts of a secondary school company exam, that they weren't eligible to play or to be a member of any of the teams. That section has been removed because, as we know, this week is the kids are all taking their high school exit exams, and it's April, so it's potential that as a high school senior may not have passed his test. He's still eligible to graduate if he passes them this week, so we remove that requirement so that people are eligible to continue in sports as long as, or in the activities, as long as they still are on track to graduate. And then the other change is under definitions. Before it had interscholastic sports, they've changed the definition now on the CS, page 3, line 3, to talk about interscholastic activities. And we did not include school government. Or if someone was required to, if there was a particular activity they wanted to do, but they had to take a class to be in that, for instance, if they wanted to be part of the choir, They couldn't go to school to be in the choir, but if there was an after-school group that was singing that didn't require them to attend the class, then they could be a member. Listening to you this morning, we also made Section 1 effective immediately and changed the effective date on Section 3 to be effective July 1st, 2013. And if you have any questions, you can ask my sister.
For the record, I used to work with word. Mr. Chairman, there was another concern raised by Representative Pruitt about a practice that I'm going to call school shopping or eligibility shopping. I would like to point out that the original bill, as well as the CS, does have language that bars the student from just trying to jump from school to school. On page 2, let me make sure it's the right one. It was page 2, line 7 of the original bill, and so it's page 2. Line 7 still, that the student can be eligible to play sports at the at what I'm going to call his local school, to which he would ordinarily attend if he were not attending an alternative school. So a student cannot jump out of his own home zone for his own exemption, for example, so there's not going to be a provision for team shopping, as it were. And if I could add one more general line of points, I'd like to get at before we just start the discussion, is there was some discussion about the financial implications of this on the schools. I'd like to make four brief points to show there is no significant disparity in financial expenses between the students involved, covered by this bill, and a regular public high school student. First, students from home schools or alternative schools would have to pay the same activity fees as we discussed earlier. Two, schools and athletic facilities are often funded by state bonds paid for by the state on a 90-10 match. Now, the state's already paid most of the cost for those bonds. The remainder is paid for by local property taxes, which are paid by the students of homeschool students, or the parents of homeschool students as well. Parents of students in homeschool must also pay property taxes, which are applied towards the 4 mil local contribution under State Education Foundation formula. In areas where there is no local match required, Bush, Alaska, then no local property taxes paid by students, parents of either students. And again, many of the costs associated with athletic programs are sunk costs. You know, the gyms, the stadiums, uniforms, balls, and equipment are already purchased. It is not necessary to equip an entire athletic department each year based solely on the contributions of this year's team members.
So. Representative Sisson had a question.
Yes, thank you. And you're talking about the fact that the parents are paying property tax in many, many communities throughout Alaska. They don't pay property tax. And is there possibly another way that that can be? I mean, to me, that to me seems like something that needs to be considered, because if in fact all students in a school have fewer resources because of students that aren't counted as part of the school, then that's doing damage to people that is unfair.
Through the chair, Representative Sisna, the issue is not necessarily the adequacy of funding for the schools, but of disparity and fairness between the students whose parents attend the local school, the parents of students who attend the local school and the parents of students who attend an alternate school but might want to participate in sports in their local school. Neither parents pay a local property tax, so there's no disparity between the two groups of students, and therefore you have fairness.
I'm not seeing that. Could you say that one more time?
Certainly.
A little different, maybe.
The issue raised was that there was a disparity in the funding provided on behalf of students who are regular attendees of the public school and students who are homeschooled who wanted to play sports. Right now, these parents do not pay local property taxes, nor do these parents.
Okay.
So there's no disparity in the two groups, so there's no unfairness. As to the larger question of whether the state, you know, how much money the school gets from the state, a different issue.
Mr.
Go ahead, Representative Sisna.
In the communities that don't have property tax, nonetheless, the school is given the amount of money dependent upon how many kids are in the school at that specific day that it's counted. And so if you bring other kids in to the school, And actually, I think, personally, I think we spend too much money on some of the things that we have, and that you can do sports a lot cheaper than when you do sports. But nonetheless, if, in fact, you're divvying it up by student, and you bring somebody in that doesn't get counted into non-property taxing communities, you're not going to make it up that way.
To the chair of the assistant, I would only say that certainly there might be some slight marginal cost to have an additional student, but again, students are required to pay participation activity fees in the districts where there is local property taxes. You know, the homeschooling parents do pay that.
But just a minute. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's good. Sorry. I just make the point that while there may be some slight marginal increase in costs, again, you don't have to pay the entire cost of the school program from the students attending each year. Students will pay participation or activity fees, you know, regardless of how where their parents are. And in areas of the state where there is a local property tax, both kinds of parents are paying that. Mm-hmm. It's not a perfect system, but nothing is.
Okay.
Any other comments?
I would also note that if there was some discussion from the folks who testified this morning from ASA that local schools will have fundraising activities. And I certainly think that homeschooled students would participate in fundraising activities to the same extent that regular members of the team would.
Any other comments from committee? Representative Seaton. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I'm trying to... so under this scenario, we're not talking about homeschool students. We're only talking about homeschool students that are in a district-provided school or a statewide accredited school, or that are all in public schools. They're a public vocational school, they're the Military Youth Academy, a public and a statewide correspondence school, I presume it is also accredited because it's and it provides less than 3 hours per week of face-to-face interaction with students. Is that right? So we're not talking about the typical homeschool students across the state.
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, we are not speaking of what I would call independent homeschools, but the definition is here. Yep, that's correct. We're not talking about independent homeschools.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Seaton.
And do students that go to the public school need to have vaccinations and those kind of things?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, it's been a long time since I was in public sports, but I might defer to somebody who's got experience as a parent, but I think they do, and they have to pass a they do have to pass a medical exam, and that documentation as a medical exam and fitness for sports would be the same standard for all students here.
Now,
follow up. No, I wasn't talking about sports. I was talking we're all activities right now, and so that's what this bill covers.
Actually, it says that you're required to provide medical records when required. Can we get that in there?
By the sport, by the activity, if required for participation in an activity by the school.
I'm going to defer that question to
the chair. Representative Seaton, are you talking about just in general when children go to school they need to have vaccinations?
Yes.
Okay. Representative Feige.
Yes. They do have to have inoculations on certain things. And then you do have to show up with a shot right
now. Representative Seaton.
And so in this case, students can go to school without those unless there's a particular vaccination or physical exam or something that's required by that specific activity.
Who the chair represents, even I believe that's correct.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, we do have one person online to testify, who did testify earlier. Gary Matthews, you testified earlier today, sir. Do you have any additional thoughts other than those that you expressed this morning, sir?
Yes, sir. Pardon me. Representative Dick, thank you for recognizing me. Yes, I've gone through this. I have the bill in front of me, and I made the notations that were mentioned already, and I appreciate the separation of the effective dates. I do have a question. There are a number of places in the second bill where interscholastic sports is referenced. I assume that any time that we reference interscholastic sports, it will be changed to interscholastic activities. Is that correct?
Yes, and let me double-check here. Are you on version X, sir?
No, I don't have the new version. I just have the original version in front of me here. So.
Yes.
Yeah, so I'll get X then. I can try to get that. I don't have access to that right now.
Okay. I'm not sure we can, Representative...
Yes, Mr. Matthews, actually, that's correct. And every place in the version you've got in front of you where it references interscholastic sports, the new version X we have does reference interscholastic activities. That is correct, yes.
Thank you. Through the chair, thank you, Representative Sadler. And a question on a recent, just I think one of Representative Sadler's more recent comments, the question was, is this only, this bill now only apply to students in school district correspondence programs, statewide correspondence programs, and military youth academies, and other public or theme-based programs, charter schools and stuff. But the question was, does it apply to what we might call a private homeschool, mom-and-pop homeschool, where parents are providing a curriculum, or there are homeschools around the state who are actually part of a national homeschool organization that provides curriculum and possibly accreditation. So I just want to make sure I have the correct interpretation. If a private homeschool does have accreditation being through a recognized body, if there's such thing as the American Homeschool Association or something, as an example, then those schools would fall under, my understanding is that school would fall under this legislation. Is that correct?
Representative Sadler.
Through the chair, Mr. Matthews, yes, if they were under the CS, if they were accredited by a recognized, what is the term here? By external, what's the term? A recognized accrediting body, then they would be covered by this, yes. And yes, indeed, I spoke with some constituents who homeschool their children. They consider themselves independent homeschoolers. They do not ascribe to an accrediting agency. They would not be participating in this program and would not expect to.
Through the chair, thank you, Representative Sadler.
Any other comment, Gary?
I don't think so. Not having the substitute X version in front of me, I think I have the gist of what was mentioned, and I appreciate the comments, and I did take notes on the financial implications and so forth. That was Mr. Pete Hefner, who was speaking on those this morning, who is one of our board members and is the president of the Cordova School Board. I'm not sure that the financial implications, those four steps that were mentioned, answered all of his questions. But I think that it was. I appreciate the fact that there's been some consideration taken of those financial implications to this point.
Yeah, thank you, Gary. I really believe we work really hard all day just trying to respond to all of the there's a lot of very good comments that really helped us craft what I believe is a better CS. Okay, with nobody else online, I will close public testimony. Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative
Z. I'll remove my objection to the adoption of version X as our working document.
Okay. Representative
Z. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move a conceptual amendment that's labeled D.2, and I'm going to conceptually change it.
Okay, for the record, CS version X has been adopted. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd move a conceptual amendment, and although it was drafted to the version that we had before us, basically it is deleting page 2, line 3 through page 3, line 10, which is section 2 of the bill. And also, I'm adding to that conceptual amendment the deletion of Section 4, which is the effective date for Section 2.
Thank you.
And, Mr. Chairman, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I think that we've seen, I mean, this bill was just introduced. We saw it for the first time in this meeting. We've seen how drastically it's changed with testimony from about three people and no testimony really from the school districts, no testimony from the home-based schools. We have a lot of interactions and things that are going on here. We are now grades 9 through 12 instead of all the grades, which may be good, but now we've jumped from sports to all interscholastic activities. We don't know. We haven't had testimony from the forensic or from the debate clubs and those kind of things. We don't know how much displacing of all of these other interscholastic activities, whether it's art, whether it's debate teams, whether it's music, we have, this has not gone out to the public for anything to us. And we really haven't heard from home schools other than one person who had a son that hadn't made the cut or something. So, Mr. Chairman, I'm not saying that I'm opposed to the idea, but at this time, I don't think that Section 2 is ready for prime time. I think that with the massive amendments we've had here in the new CS, with as little testimony as we've had, I think that shows us as much as anything. And so, you know, we haven't had any discussion of the liability issues on all these other kids coming as far as the liability for insurance and those kind of things that happen for expanding possibly greatly the number of people participating in a district school that are not coming to the district and for which we have state funding. So no state funding is going to come to the public school to supply this, and yet we're increasing a legal liability for the participation in all these things. So I, Mr. Chairman, I, like I say, I'm not sure that I have a a real problem with this. I have a real problem since we haven't heard from any of our constituents that are involved in all these things or the effect on my school district. And my school district is in one of these funding crises, and this could make it much worse because there could be a lot of participation in a lot of interscholastic activities, and nobody has ever told me that interscholastic activities are the cheapest part of school. And that's what we're saying, is we're going to expand the enrollment in those activities. So, Mr. Chairman, that's why I put this forward, not because I am totally opposed to the idea, but I don't think that we've heard enough testimony and enough of the issues been resolved.
Thank you. Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you. I support the amendment, and I actually support the first part of the bill, which is just pretty pro forma. It's a bill that we adopted last year, and it's a technical tweak that I think needs to occur. But the second part of the bill, the second section that has been introduced today, agreeing with Representative Seaton that it was just introduced late last week and finally came to this body this morning, but is a huge policy call on behalf of this education committee. I appreciate the idea that we've tried to expand interscholastic activities, so it's not just sports, but I think it also leaves some problematic questions that are unanswered. Groups like show choir, like Model UN, things like that that offer that are offered to students in my community. Now it appears under this bill might be offered to kids that kids outside of those particular schools. So, if, you know, I don't want to be in a position passing this piece of legislation without vetting and without talking to my school district and saying suddenly that kids there that are in at Lathrop High School and the basketball team might get trumped by another kid who's in a homeschool that does not, or homeschool or some other program that has a lower threshold or requirements of learning. And, you know, we put those kids that are at Lathrop High School, want to go to Lathrop High School, they want to be Malamutes, they want to kick Anchorage team's asses, and I think that they ought to. But, you know,
only they could.
We do. But, but you know, I mean, what am I supposed to say to the kid that gets ejected from a team by another student who maybe plays a little bit better but has an educational standard based under this, under Section L, which I don't know completely what it means. And again, I think it goes to the point that we just saw this bill. I don't think I'm opposed to the bill on surface. We have homeschool students that participate in sports in our district. I don't know how many private homeschool students that we have in our district, but that's something that I've called up to my district to find out. I've called our risk manager also to talk about the liability issue. I'm waiting back for calls on that, and I'll support amendment number one.
Representative Sisna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I also would like to speak in favor of amendment number one. Is number one. For a lot of the same reasons that I think I heard before, because I think that this bill really hits something, and the second part of the bill, it's something that is really, really needed in Alaska, that it's part of what I've seen. It's been 16 years since I started door-to-dooring in my district, and I've made it through something like 12 years. I've been going to every one of those doors, and huge numbers of people in Anchorage are homeschoolers. Huge number of families actually are homeschooling. And what I've been able to see is some of the really neat, creative things that they've dealt with, trying to bring in the social part. And it really is, that's one of the huge problems. And I myself was to my son, who was in ninth, or he was in, oh, good, Sharon, I don't even remember, eighth grade. I think it was eighth grade. And he had been, actually before I came into his life, he'd gone to a faith-based school, and they tried to work with him, and he was falling steadily behind. And we got him home, and I started a 4-H group, a junior high, fourth grade, 4-H group, and so that we had a group of kids in the house every week, doing activities, physical whenever we could. When it was raining, this was Kodiak, so, you know, unfortunately raining a lot. But that meant that we could put in that social piece. We didn't do as well as I've seen other people doing, and we need to go there. And I think what this amendment is talking to is the fact that this idea is a great idea, and it needs to be worked through so that really it's not something that gets in there and is done wrong, but gets in there and really, really does what we need to have for our school programs. Because you do need homeschoolers. Just in my case, my son was raised three and a half grade levels in 1 year. And it was because, I'll tell you my secret, he would focus for about an hour and a half, and then he had to run around the block, which was about 3 miles, and then we go back to the next subject, and he made it through that way. And it really was, I think it's something that I ought to patent, huh? But anyway, so that's why I'm speaking in favor of this amendment.
Any other comment from committee? Representative Feige.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm a no vote on the amendment. I think it's important that all kids have the opportunity to participate in sports or other activities at the school. It's enriching for them. As far as the money aspects, whatever community they're in, they're paying the same amount of burden if they're paying property taxes, or they're due the same amount of due support from the state, since we fund education in most of the state. Certainly, it's not something that it's something that they should be able to share in. As far as the overall, look at the at this section, I'm pretty satisfied. An alternative education program, as it's defined here, is basically an accredited program. It's not just some parent taking their kid and handing out A's. An accredited program means it's got some structure, it's got a curriculum, it's got a grading scheme. So I think it puts it at least on a par with the existing public school system. The documentation and all that stuff kids are going to have to provide in the school. As it's written in the bill, it's up to the school to demand whatever documentation it needs. So if the kid wants to play, it can bring the documentation as required by the school. I wish it wasn't more than grades 9 through 12, but that's what we need to do to get this in here. That's fine. In my district, most of the schools already allow homeschoolers to come in and participate in a variety of things. So, and especially in some of the smaller schools in the state, those extra people help round out the activities for the other students. And they don't seem to be complaining about the cost or the fairness or anything like that now. So, vote appropriately, I suppose.
Any other comments from committee? I'd like to say I was the homeschool teacher for the Iditarod School District, and I saw the best and sometimes the worst of homeschool. This much I know is that for most homeschoolers, when they get done with the homeschool program, they step down into college. They're disciplined. They can sit around the kitchen table with all the noise, and they can get the work done. And if you take a look at the nationwide and you watch the spelling bee, what percentage in the homeschoolers are all massive percentage. Why? Because homeschoolers are really, because of parental involvement, they're getting a far better education than many of the students in the public school. And if you look at the cost to the state of homeschool programs, they're what? Less than half. So I really like the idea of I like the idea of Section 1 and Section 2 of this bill. So Any other comments in committee? Is the objection maintained?
Yes.
To the amendment?
Yes.
Okay. Please call roll.
Amendment 1 to CS for HB 369. Representative Sisna?
Yes.
Representative Kawasaki?
Yes.
Representative Wilson? No. Representative Feige? No. Representative Pruitt? No. Chair Dick?
No. I have
3 yeas, 4 nays. Okay, so amendment number one. Fails. Are there any other amendments? Okay. What is the will of the committee?
Mr. Chair, I move CS for HB 369 version X from committee with the individual recommendations accompanying the bill to submit.
Is there objection to the motion?
Objection.
Okay. Please call roll.
For the movement of CS of HB 369, Representative Pruitt?
Yes.
Representative Sisna?
No.
Representative Kawasaki?
No.
Representative Wilson?
Yes.
Representative Speaks?
Yes.
Representative Feige?
Yes.
Chair Dick?
Yes.
I have 5 yeas, 2 nays.
Okay, and so the CSHB 369 does move from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal zero fiscal note. On Friday, April 4 at 8 a.m., we're scheduled to hear a presentation by Craig School District. Any other comment from committee? No other comment? We're adjourned at 7:07.